Blog Talk Radio.
Johnson and Dr. Reggie Johnson, and we are continuing on in the book study, Breaking Free from Critical Addiction by Kaylee Marino. I just want to start out today. Let's go ahead and start with an opening prayer so that we can get going in down into the lesson for today. So, Heavenly Father, thank you for this brand new day. Thank you for new opportunities and new ways to know our truths. We are so fortunate, so blessed in so many ways, and we just ask for your continued guidance, love, and support as we proceed. And so it is, and so it is. Okay, so today, happy Monday morning to you. And today we are going on into step two. We will be finishing the book up. That is my objective this week, is to get the steps covered as well as to touch on the very last part of the book a little more there so that we can get ready to start a brand new book study. So let's see. Last week, as we closed out the week, we did get into our first step, which was own it. So we talked a lot last week about own it, the first step. And so we talked about recognizing that the problem is in your mind. From that vantage point, you're able to actually make some new choices so that you'll come through whatever it is you're dealing with. So that is recognize the problem is in your mind. That was a big part of step one. The second big part of step one, just to recap a little bit of what that first step was all about, was name your inner critic. Now, I've done that. I've actually given my, and hopefully you have too, given my inner critic a name. Her name is Precious Patty. And I have set the intention to love her into submission, okay? And that's working out actually pretty good. So whenever I notice those negative thoughts or inclinations come up, I number one, I observe it, as we were taught to do here in the first part of the book, is simply observing that, because we now know that the observer effect actually change what's being observed. So that's the number one thing. And, again, my intention is to love her into submission, so I haven't had any real issues with trying to argue with that inner critic because I just want to love her to sleep, you know? All right, so we are going to go ahead and move down into step two today, devalue it. So remember, I'll go over quickly before we get into the step two what all four of the steps are. Number one is own it, and she says notice your feelings, recognizing that the problem is in your mind, which is what we just talked about. Step two is devalue it, recognize that any form of negativity has no value, and that's what we'll be talking about today. Number three is flip it, release negatives and choose peace. And number four is replace it, focus on something of real value to you. Okay, so those are the four steps. And again, we will start out today with step two, devalue it. Now, under the subtitle of devalue it, she notes here that criticism addicts are attracted to negativity, like moths are attracted to a flame, because they value it. So she starts us out with that subtitle there, and I'm going to go ahead and read. She's starting out with negativity here. Just as alcoholism is a compelling attraction to alcohol, the heroin addiction is compelling attraction to heroin. Critical addiction is a compelling attraction to negativity. Okay, and she does underline that particular sentence. Critical addiction is a compelling attraction to negativity. Negativity is the food of the inner critic that perpetuates this social disease. Negativity is the attractive substance of this addiction. The attraction to negativity is what makes critical addiction such an insidious disease. Addicts seek negativity and attract it to themselves without realizing that is what they're doing, because they were taught that negativity has value. As I pointed out in the first chapter, our society values negativity in the form of criticism, guilt, and fear. As long as we value them, we will attract negativity into our lives. This step is about discounting the value of internal and external negative messages. So as you might guess, your ego and inner critic will not like this step and may argue with it intensely. The Wizard of Oz offers a great metaphor that illustrates how blind we can be to our strengths while also valuing negative things that scare us. Like the characters in Oz, we can be unaware of our real strengths, and the tin man longed for a heart, the scarecrow longed for brains, and the cowardly lion longed for courage. They did so not because they lacked the qualities, but because they valued them and didn't know those qualities. We're already within themselves. Dorothy also discovered that what she wanted most, to go home, was already within her ability. It is important to note that they didn't discover those authentic qualities until after they had faced their fears. When they pulled the curtain on the wizard, the object of their fear, they saw that what they feared had no real power and nothing of value. The wizard had merely put on a big drama, using their fears for their power. Doesn't the wizard sound like the inner critic to you? Yeah, I think so, Kaylee, too. Like the characters in Wizard of Oz, we need to face our fears and see that negativity, criticism, guilt, worry, and fear have no value. And like the wizard, our inner critic does not want to be revealed. It does not want us to see the worthlessness of negativity or that our negative assumptions are false. Like the wizard, the ego has no real existence of its own. It depends on false identity made out of limiting assumptions about us, and it feeds on negativity. So you can understand that the challenging these assumptions will be very threatening to the ego. However, every time you challenge a false assumption, it begins to crumble, like the Wicked Witch when she began to melt. As your negative assumptions crumble, the real you will awaken and begin to emerge. All right, so let's talk about that first section just a little bit there. She's comparing the inner critic to the movie The Wizard of Oz and the characters in that movie, how they longed for different traits such as courage and heart and brains. And she's noting here that the only reason that they longed for those qualities was not because they lacked them, but because they valued them. So that was, I thought that was something worth discussing there, is the fact that we long for these things because we value them, not because they're lacking in us. you know. So, and we can get that confused sometimes, thinking that the real reason why we want something is because it's lacking. But the truth is that it's we're wanting that because we truly are finding value in that particular thing, such as courage or strength or brains, as she put it with the Wizard of Oz there. All right, so we are going to move on into negative assumptions. We've talked about that a little bit last week as well when we discussed false assumptions, which was a very interesting part of the book, I thought. It was actually one of the best parts of the book, is talking about those negative or false assumptions, in my opinion. All right, so we're going to move down now into negative assumptions. The inner critic makes assumptions based on your wounds and old programming. Every conclusion we make is an assumption of truth, not a fact. Once we realize that most of our beliefs are assumptions, we will be free to change the assumptions that bring us pain to ones that bring us peace. Even if our new answers are also assumptions, they are useful assumptions when they empower us to create a life that brings us joy, peace, and happiness. Okay, so I want to just pause there for just a moment to address one particular sentence in that first paragraph that really jumped out at me when I was reading through this material. And that is that every conclusion we make is an assumption of truth, not a fact. Now, the reason why that jumped out at me initially was initially because I was a little confused on what a conclusion was. So, for instance, I had to choose, before I started my reading last night, I was thinking about whether I wanted a glass of water or a glass of cranberry juice. So my thought was, when I read this sentence, was, well, I just came to a conclusion about what I wanted to drink, you know, so is that what she's meaning here? So I wanted to look up the word conclusion, and as I was getting ready to look the word up, it dawned on me, really, that what I had made with the glass of water or glass of juice was a choice. So that's one thing that I want to, you know, in case you may be taking that information in as a conclusion is the same as a choice. It's not. A conclusion actually is, and I actually what I did here was I wrote down three examples of conclusions to give you a better idea of what conclusions are, because like I said, they're not choices. So the first example I want to share with you about conclusions is that all birds fly. So I make that statement, and that's a conclusion. And as Kaylee pointed out, that we make assumptions of truth. Every conclusion we make is an assumption of truth, not a fact. So in this particular conclusion, this example that I'm giving you here, we know that all birds don't fly. There are penguins that don't fly as well as ostriches. So in the second example, I wrote that all athletes are naturally strong and healthy. That's also a conclusion that has some falseness to it. We know that several athletes have been recently in the media for using performance enhancing drugs. So that statement is also not true. All athletes are naturally strong and healthy. That is not necessarily a true statement. And the last one I wanted to share, which is the one I think will relate to the most, is all rich people are greedy and selfish. Okay, that's also a conclusion. We know famous people, of course, everybody knows Oprah. She's big on philanthropy. But there's also famous people or rich people like Magic Johnson. He runs the Magic Johnson Foundation and does has these community empowerment centers all over, especially California, that help youth, and he also has a very strong AIDS ministry. So that statement is also not completely true. Now, if you'll notice one thing about those three examples, first of all, every example includes the word all. So one thing to remember about conclusions, it's It's including everything. So, and we know in most cases everything doesn't apply to everyone, but that's what a conclusion is all about. It's all about including everything and labeling everything as one thing, and that's drawing conclusions. So the other thing I wanted to point out about conclusions in this context is that conclusions really look like beliefs, do they not? They saying that all birds fly or all athletes are naturally strong and healthy, those also sound to me like beliefs. After I wrote those, I thought, wow, those are also beliefs that you could have. So, you know, from what I was able to determine here, beliefs and conclusions look an awful lot alike. Just like Kaylee pointed out, the Wizard of Oz sounding an awful lot like the inner critic there. So we'll go ahead and move on. I just wanted to make that, to bring that point to light there. Okay, so she goes on to say, when you become aware of the negative belief, ask yourself if it is a fact or just an assumption. Remember that truth always brings peace. So if this belief hurts, it can't be true. However, it is my experience that most people need to gain more understanding about the nature of these beliefs before they can discredit them altogether, based on this premise alone. So begin to question those beliefs, and there Kaylee is calling them beliefs as well, and their underlying assumptions. So we just did that. We just questioned all three of the beliefs that I gave conclusions, and again, she did call them beliefs as well in this book. So we just questioned those beliefs. Is it true that all birds fly? No, we gave examples of birds that don't fly. So once we begin to question those beliefs, and again, she's pointing out in that paragraph again, to remember that truth always brings peace. So if this belief hurts, it can't be true. So we'll continue on there. Where did you get this belief? Who told you it was true? Did you hear someone say it? Or did you just assume it was true by the way someone treated you? For example, if a parent did everything for you, you may have mistakenly assumed they behaved that way because you weren't capable of doing things for yourself. The truth is that people do what they do because of their own needs and wounds and not because of you. Consider the qualities of the message giver. What kind of person gave you the message? A kind person, a hateful person, a fearful person? What state of mind were they in when they did it? Were they upset? So she's giving us ways there to begin to question the conclusions that we're drawing and conclusions/beliefs that we're coming to about life. She's giving us ways to kind of question that line of thinking. Where did we get it from? Who told us it was true? And then again, she gave us that example of a parent who did everything for you. You could have assumed that they behaved that way because you were not capable of doing things yourself. So she goes on here to say, learn to discredit negative messages by actively remembering that people act the way they do because of their own needs and wounds, not because of you. All right, I think that's really worth doubling back on there. Learn to discredit negative messages by actively remembering that people act the way they do because of their own needs and wounds, not because of you. Okay? The message people give you can only reflect the kind of person they are and their state of mind at the time, not what you are. Even if the person meant it personally, no one, including your inner critic, has the authority to judge you or make decisions for you about who or what you are. And I gave an example last week of a longstanding belief or conclusion that I had come to based on some information that or feelings or impressions that I had received from my parents when I was younger. That really made me believe that the world was an unsafe place. And it wasn't until I began to question those beliefs that they began to literally crumble. So she's really encouraging us at this point to begin to question what we've set up as a conclusion in our mind or a belief. Question who gave us that message. Were they kind? Were they hateful? Were they a fearful person? So those things, and then most importantly, she's saying here that people act the way they do because of their own needs and wounds. So really it has nothing to do with us personally, but and everything to do with the person who's giving you the message, what were their wounds and their personal stuff that they had going on. So she finishes up this section by saying, also be sure to notice any loving or supportive messages from inside and write them down. These messages are especially important. They will help reinforce or help develop your inner coach. Write down the positive messages and keep them in a place where you will not lose them. They are very valuable. These are gems of wisdom that help you feel good about yourself. Remember, every loving thought is true because it feels good. And feeling good helps you to discover the truth about yourself, which leads to freedom. True. All right, so we're now going to move down into fear is not useful. So she's saying there, I have heard so-called experts talk about healthy fear, but I've never found anything healthy about fear, even when we are in danger. While it is true that the body pumps adrenaline, giving us the extra energy to run away from danger, we don't have to be afraid to know to run, just intelligent. Most people's fear has nothing to do with being in imminent danger or the body's flight or flight reaction. Most fear is from images created in our minds about what we imagine might happen. In times of real danger, people seldom report feeling fear. In fact, they often talk about having surreal experiences of total detachment or of time slowing down. They are usually shocked when they realize that they weren't afraid during the traumatic experience. People commonly experience fear when they hesitate to act because they don't know what to do or because they are afraid of making a mistake. Indecision is a subtle form of fear itself, which can be very painful. All right, so choose. Indecision is a subtle form of fear. So anywhere where you're riding the fence, make a choice. Make a choice because riding the fence is a subtle form of being afraid. All right, so I'm moving on there. After a real emergency or traumatic experience is over, people often reflect back on the event and imagine how it could have been worse. I could have been killed. Please notice that while this presents itself as very dramatic realization, it's not based in reality. It is based on pure imagination. Reflections on past possibilities that did not happen only produce drama, because the event is already over. The feared possibility didn't happen, and it's not slated to happen in the future. That being said, it is not common for a person's body to shake after the real danger is over, as it releases the effects of the trauma. All right, so we're going to pause there for just a moment. She's really talking about in that paragraph woulda, shouldas, and couldas. All right, so she didn't call it that, but it really does boil down to that. What would have she gave an example here of someone experiencing a traumatic event and then replaying that event in their mind, saying things like I could have been killed. It was awful. So those replaying past events is not based in reality. The possibilities, things that could have gone wrong there, it's not based in reality. It's based in pure imagination. And what I took from this part of the book is that she's encouraging us to move away from those acting on, purely on our imagination, reflecting on the past possibilities that didn't happen, only produces drama is what she's saying. Because it's already over. The feared possibility didn't happen, and it's not slated to happen in the future. So those woulda, couldas, and shouldas, yeah, they're not that. They don't work that well for us. They're not the best way for us to remain. And then also the other thing about woulda, coulda, and shouldas is that it throws you out in the future or it keeps you in the past. All right? And so we know that the best place for us to be, where all of our power is right here present in this moment. So these woulda, coulda, shouldas and replaying things over, that's really big for me. That's something that I do a lot, especially after I've gone through, say, a big meeting. You know, I'm constantly sitting back going, oh, you know, I should have said this, or, it's just not helpful at all to do that. So we're going to move on here because I do want to complete this first step today. All right, so when we have lived through a real traumatic event in which we were hurt or injured, physically or emotionally, we may relive the pain of the event over and over again through images in our minds. Our inner critic generates fear by warning us that it will happen again. There is nothing healthy about this fear either. Do we need fear to avoid fire? No. We simply need education about the effects of fire. I'm not afraid of fire, yet I've never stick my hand over a flame. I have been educated to know that fire burns. My mother taught me the effects of fire without ever burning me or filling me with fear. My mother also taught me that good mothers worry. That is common belief that has been passed down for generations in many families. While mothers may worry, worry doesn't help them be better mothers. In fact, it can make a mother's source of fear and it can make a mother a source of fear and negativity, especially if she fears the worst for her child. Instead of being fearful, a mother can be a source of strength and inspiration by having faith in her children to deal with any challenge. Worry and anxiety are just other forms of fear that are not useful or healthy. You may not be able to stop yourself from being fearful or anxious right now, but you can learn to recognize those feelings and begin to question their validity. All right? It's all about shining that light of awareness and questioning whether or not those are valid. So going on here, while it may not be the truth, we still have a reason or explanation for why we are afraid. If you identify the vulnerable feelings that are the source of your fear, you will discover your unspoken self-judgments. For example, if you are anxious and you name your vulnerable feelings, you may find that you are feeling inadequate, weak, or not good enough. That means your inner critic is assuming that you are inadequate, weak, and not good enough, and you believe it. If you challenge those assumptions, you may find out that they are wrong and that you are far more capable and stronger than you realize. Maybe you simply don't recognize your abilities right now. Just say, I am willing to be wrong about these assumptions. At first, you may or may not be able to identify the messages themselves, but you can begin to recognize when you are feeling fearful or negative. Recognize that the fear is not valuable or useful. This recognition is a huge step since many, if not most people, are guided by fear. If this step seems too difficult to understand, just take in the information and put it on a shelf in your mind. That is what I do when I don't understand something. I think all of us have an internal truth meter that recognizes truth when we hear it, but we don't always understand it, so we can't always use it immediately. When an idea feels true to me, I don't have to understand it to put it on the shelf in my mind. I have a lot of shelf space there. Every now and then, I get an insight and retrieve some great gem of wisdom that suddenly makes sense. While this may not be a step that you can master right now, just read it and go on to the next step where you can choose peace. That is where the real power is anyway. You can also check out the shortcuts in the last chapter to help you. There is no right or wrong way to learn and grow. Just take it one step and one breath at a time. When you are feeling frustrated with this process, take a deep breath and look for another way to see your problems. Intention is everything. So you will start making progress by simply choosing peace. I choose peace. Even just saying the phrase is powerful. The universe will support your choice and will help, and help will come to you in ways you never dreamed possible. All right, so right there in that section, she's actually giving us two very empowering questions that I just want to double back on to make sure you caught those two questions. The first one, the first question is, I'm willing to be wrong about these assumptions. So we now know that the inner critic is not really who we are. We know that the inner critic has stored up all of these false assumptions about us that make us feel inadequate, weak, or not good enough. So one of the questions that we can begin to ask is, am I willing to be wrong about these assumptions? Another great question, and I love that one because I think it's really easy to remember, is, or it's not actually a question, it's a statement, is I choose peace. That's an easy one to remember, especially when you're upset about something. Simply saying the words, I choose peace, is powerful in and of itself. She says the universe will support your choice and will help. Help will come to you in ways that you never dreamed possible. All right. So I'm going to skip down here now to the last part of this particular section because I do want to talk a little bit about some of the warning, the common warnings that the inner critic will give off as a result of that there, of fear. Fear is not a guidance system. People usually treat fear like a guidance system, avoiding anything they fear. In this misguided manner, they operate as if fear was a sign that real danger is present, then believe that they shouldn't do something that causes them fear. Their mind says, that's scary, so I better not do that or I'll get hurt. This is not true, and I can prove it. In 2001, when the Twin Towers went down on September 11th, there were many people who were supposed to be in the towers that day, but they weren't for various reasons. You may have heard some of those stories. One man's wife called and asked him to come home and help her with something. Another person was invited to a social gathering. Someone else took the day off to do some creative work. Of all the stories I heard, the one story I didn't hear was, I just couldn't force myself to go in the towers that day. Something told me something terrible was going to happen. Did you hear that story? I didn't hear about anyone staying away because they were afraid to go in the towers. They were all guided to be someplace else. So she's really pointing out there that fear didn't save those people. Being afraid didn't save them. Their internal guidance is what steered them to either do something else or be somewhere else. Fear is not an indication that we shouldn't move forward. Fear is there to perhaps remind. Let's go back up and see what Kaylee says about that. She says that they operate as if fear is a sign that real danger is present. They believe they shouldn't do anything that causes them fear. This is not true. Okay, so fear is not a guidance system for us. That's what the subtitle of this section is. So I'm going to continue on here. Guidance does not use fear to guide us because it is loving and fearless. Remember we talked about that, about love being fearless. Guidance does just what its name implies. It guides us towards something that may take us out of harm's way. Most people do not know that they even have guidance. Not following our guidance is often how we learn that we have it. Haven't you ever had a gut feeling to do something that you didn't do only to regret it later? if you always followed your feelings, you wouldn't know that there can be a negative consequences to not following them. Fear, worry, and anxiety are emotional reactions to an imagined future. Imagined future is the key word there, I think, not reality. Fear is the emotion generated when you assume that something bad is going to happen. You imagine that you will get hurt. The brain doesn't know the difference between a physical event and the images in your mind. So it produces adrenaline and prepares you to defend yourself or run, regardless of the source of the images. So you see, playing those fearful images over in your mind, we've already talked about the mind not being able to really decipher whether it's your fear or someone else's fear that you're talking about or you're thinking about. So it begins to produce this adrenaline and prepares you to defend yourself or to run regardless of the source of the images. So it's not weighing whether or not this is a valid concern for you. It's not adding that level of understanding. The brain is simply acknowledging that fear is present and I need to release, or the brain needs to release adrenaline so that you can be prepared to run or fight or flight. Fear is usually an emotional reaction to your imagination. It is not a prediction of a real event. However, if you let it, the inner critic can cause you to avoid taking action out of fear, which in itself could have negative consequences. The inner critic often warns us of danger, but if you pay attention to these warnings and follow its advice, you may avoid your own happiness. Okay, so tomorrow then we are actually going to pick up on some of these common warnings. There are just a few warnings that she wants us to be aware of here on these. Actually, I'm going to go ahead and go over briefly these common warnings today. I do have something I'd like to share with you at the end of the broadcast today. So I wanted to allow time for that, but let me briefly touch on what these common warnings are. One of the first ones that she gives us, and tomorrow we'll discuss in depth what these warnings mean. Again, she says that the inner critic will begin to warn us based on these fears that we have. And some of the common warnings are, number one, if things are too good, something bad will happen. So the faulty logical conclusion there is that good things cause bad things to happen. The second warning is expect the worst so you won't be disappointed, because you never get what you expect or ask for anyway. That reminds me of the old saying that goes, expect the worst and hope for the best. Okay, so that's the inner critic speaking there. And the other warning is, this is too good to be true, where she talks about the faulty logical conclusion there is good things can't be true. Can you begin to see how some of these warning signs can truly prevent us from pursuing what could really potentially make us happy? And just a couple more warnings here. Avoid loving relationships or you'll get hurt. And then the last one is avoid pain. All right, so tomorrow we will touch more, because step three is really a short step. Step two was a little bit longer step, I think, because she really went into fear like she hasn't gone into it in other areas of this book. She really talked about fear here, and there were some really very valid points that she made about fear and how we allow fear to literally stop us in our tracks. She pointed out a very interesting example using the towers on 9/11, how people were guided to not be there, that it wasn't fear that kept them necessarily from going in the buildings that day. It was their internal guidance system. And she also talks to us about guidance. Guidance is loving, that it has no fear in guidance. So that if you're feeling fearful, then you're probably not operating from your internal guidance system. And that sense of fear can also stop you from going forward and pursuing some of the things that may make you happy. So, again, we will roll back on these common warnings here tomorrow, and we'll talk a little bit more about those, and then we'll get step three completed. So now, the thing that I wanted to share today was I have a favorite song that I always listen to. It always encourages me to, in so many ways, you know, whenever I'm feeling down or not even necessarily feeling down, if I just want to get into, to raise my vibration, I listen to this song. I love it, and I think that it also encompasses what's possible for us. If we can do this this work, if we can address this inner critic, then I think this song really speaks to what's really possible for us. And so I wanted to share that with you as a form of encouragement. Today is Monday, so I'd like to set the pace for your week this week, if you will, by playing this magnificent song. The person who sings this song, her name is Miss Mystical. So we will. I will go ahead and play that song for you now. And before I do so, I'm just going to do the closing prayer, because after the song, we will be ending the show. And I hope you like the song. If so, shoot me an email. I'm at gloria.wells@circlesofprosperity.org. All right, so Heavenly Father, thank you for another great lesson. Thank you for thank you for more information. Thank you for information that we can use to be all that you created us to be. We know that you created us perfectly, Father, and we thank you for that. And we just go forward this day with that knowledge and truth close to our heart. I know that it is so, and so it is. All right, so here's the song, and enjoy your week, and I will see you back here tomorrow at 7 a.m.
Blessings, love, abundance, joy, bliss, harmony, wonderment.